Good morning. I'm State Representative Dave Pinto. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual hearings of this type. I want to direct the attention of members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find a number of materials relating to this meeting, including the agenda, and you can check that out. I'm going to ask our committee legislative assistant, Ms. Chambers, to please take the role.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson. Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Damon. Representative Juergens.
Juergens present.
Representative Cotiza Watune.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Wazlowick.
Present.
And Representative Wolgamott. We do have a quorum.
Wolgamott present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. I knew that Representative Wolgamott was with us, good stuff. So I'm going to ask Representative Pryor, Vice Chair, to move approval of the minutes from our prior meeting on March 24th.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Any additions or corrections, members, to those minutes? And not hearing any, all in favor of approval of the minutes of March 24th, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails, and those minutes from March 24th are adopted. Thank you, Representative Pryor. This is an exciting point in the session. After several months of working together, we are finally going to be considering our committee's budget proposal for this session. Just a few introductory comments about that. We, as members, of course, will know, and hopefully members of the public who've been with us along the way, we've really been examining these two crises in early care and learning. The one being the fact that that the economics just don't work in this sector, that families are facing unaffordable care when they can find it at all, really crushing in that way. And then those people doing this work very often receiving poverty level wages. And we heard some pretty stark information about that. That's the one crisis on the one side, and on the other side are the opportunity gaps in our state that we know that start at the very youngest ages. We've heard an estimate of something on the order of $1 billion to make sure that the lowest income children below 185% of poverty receive the early care and learning and support that they need to get off to a great start. And so today, members, we're going to be considering a proposal really this week to try to address that and to move in the right direction on that. And it really is an extraordinary opportunity that we face in that we have received both a public budget target. And I think the first time in the history of our state, state legislature, that our committee received a public budget target, $50 million state general fund spending. But in addition, through the federal American Rescue Plan, there are federal funds available as well to address this. And what our bill does that we're going to be considering this week is that it proposes spending both from those federal funds and from the state general funds that we've have the target for to try to make a significant dent, at least in these crises that we've identified. And so the process the next couple of days, just to make sure that we're confirmed on this, is that today we're going to be doing a walkthrough of the proposal through our House staff and answering any questions the members may have at this point. Tomorrow we'll be receiving testimony from members of the public, and I want to encourage folks who are watching to plan on that. We'll be back at 8:30 tomorrow for that. And then on Thursday, we'll be walking through the bill and considering amendments and proposals. I really want to urge everyone to, as this process is moving quickly, to please give us input thoughts on the proposal, and I know that you will be. Especially we're in an unusual circumstance because of these federal funds that have become, we've become aware of so recently, we're having to move much more quickly even than we might in a typical session for that to happen. And so I want to make sure to urge folks to provide the information for us. Really, it was our prior meeting, the one that we just approved the minutes for, March 24th, where we got to hear some details about those federal funds. And I know that more details will be coming in the next weeks. And in the meantime, we have to stick with our budget process, which does require us to move a bill this week. So we've got a lot of things interlocking and interacting together, but we're going to make it happen together. So with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Representative Pryor, if she can, to move House File 2230 to bring it back before the committee. And actually, you know what occurs to me? I think that that bill may have just been laid over previously. So I think that I can actually take it back up off the table. I'm going to actually, Representative Pryor, I may not need that after all. It's now occurring to me. I think I'm going to do that. And if staff believes that that's wrong, you can please correct me. But I believe that we've heard the bill before and have laid it over. So as chair, I can simply pick it back up, which I'm doing. And so what I'm going to ask our House staff to do then is to walk through, to remind everyone, House File 2230 was a proposal, contained a number of proposals from the administration. Then what we're gonna be doing is hearing the DE1 amendment. We'll be hearing that on Thursday when we go through the bill. Right now I'm gonna ask staff to walk through that amendment, which contains my proposal as chair for what we should do as a committee. There is another amendment, an A3 amendment, which simply contains some technical corrections. And so we'll eventually have staff walk through that as well. But for now, what we're going to do is go through the DE1 amendment, make sure everyone's aware that that is that's kind of the basis of what hopefully will be passing on Thursday after we consider members' amendments. And so I'm going to start with Ms. Mock with House Research, who I just need to give a shout out to. She's done incredible work on this last week and a half, especially in kind of wrestling this thing down for us and with us. And I'm just so grateful to her. And so Ms. Mock, if you can walk through the bill, I would encourage members and members of the public, you'll find the link to the DE1 on our website. And so you can just sort of follow along both with that and with the bill summary Ms. Mock has prepared. So Ms. Mock, please take it from here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm Annie Mock with House Research, and I'm gonna walk through the DE1. And as Chair Pinto just said, you were you were sent a copy of the DE1 and also a bill summary of the DE1 and a fiscal tracking sheet, which my colleagues will go through when I'm finished. So before I get started, I'll just note that the DE1 both appropriates money from the state general fund to pay for proposals, and it also allocates federal money that the state will receive under the American Rescue Plan to also pay for proposals. So the appropriations and allocations are in Articles 5 and 6 of the bill, and I'll mention them as I walk through. So I'll start with Article 1, which includes policies that affect the Child Care Assistance Program. Sections 1 and 2 relate to the Basic Sliding Fee Program. Section 1 reprioritizes the Basic Sliding Fee waiting list, and Section 2 modifies the formula for allocating money to counties for their Basic Sliding Fee programs. These proposals were included in House File 1467, and the bill allocates federal money to cover the cost of reprioritization. Section 3 points to a different definition of income for purposes of eligibility for child care assistance. This proposal was in the A2 amendment to House File 2230. Section 4 allows DHS to initiate efforts to recover child care assistance over payments from families and providers. Under current law, only county agencies are specified as being able to initiate recovery efforts. This section also provides a new circumstance under which families or providers with outstanding child care assistance debts may regain eligibility for participation in the program. And this proposal is a modified version of a proposal that was included in House File 1466. Section 5 prohibits county agencies from issuing provisional authorization and payment for child care assistance to providers while the agency is still determining whether to give the provider final authorization. This proposal was included in House File 1466. Section 6 modifies child care assistance rates. This section directs DHS to set rates up to a maximum of the 75th percentile of the most recent child care provider rate survey, but no lower than the 50th percentile of the most recent child care provider rate survey. And just as a reminder, under current law, rates are set at the 25th percentile of the 2018 survey. This section also makes corresponding changes to the registration fees for child care assistance. And this proposal is a modified version of several proposals the committee heard that affect child care rates. And the bill allocates federal money to pay for this proposal. Section 7 is a new proposal. This section increases the child care assistance rate for legal, non-licensed family child care providers. Under current law, these child care providers, the rate for these child care providers is 68% of the hourly rate for licensed family child care providers. So this section would increase the percent to 90. And the bill allocates federal money for this proposal. Section 8, paragraph C, and this starts on line 8.22, It limits the number of months a provider can retroactively receive child care assistance payments from 6 months down to 3 months. And this proposal was in the A2 amendment to House File 2230. The remainder of the changes in this section were in House File 1466. Paragraph D adds certified license exempt child care providers to the list of providers that may have their child care assistance authorization refused or revoked by a county or DHS. And paragraph G provides circumstances under which a child care provider must forfeit child care assistance payments to a county or DHS. Section 9 is also from House File 1466, and it modifies the circumstances under which a family receiving child care assistance is assessed with overpayment for absent days. Section 10 is new language that modifies how child care facility grants may be used. DHS currently distributes money for child care facility grants to First Children's Finance, and then First Children's Finance uses the grant money for activities like providing loans and grants to improve or construct child care sites and also to provide business planning assistance to child care providers. This section provides that the grants may also be used for business training and consultation. And I'll also note that the bill allocates federal money for these grants. Section 11 has two repealers. One repeals Section 119B04, which provides authority to DHS that is also provided under a different section. And then the section also repeals 119B125, subdivision 5. And this repeal is related to the proposal that's in Section 5 of this article. So moving on to Article 2, and just if you're following along, I'm on page 12, line 16 of the DE1. All the proposals in this section relate to the recommendations from the Family Child Care Task Force. Section 1 establishes the Office of the Ombudsperson for Family Child Care Providers. This proposal is a modified version of what was in House File 61, and the bill appropriates money from the general fund for this proposal. Section 2 allows DHS to issue up to 4 child care licenses to certain types of license holders, and it also allows DHS to approve up to 4 licenses at the same location. This proposal is a modified version of a proposal that was in House File 2003. Section 3 allows a family child care provider to count up to 2 hours of training instruction for the provider's annual 16-hour training requirement. This proposal was in House File 2003. Section 4 also contains a proposal that was in House File 2003, and this section adds types of training courses that meet the training requirements for family child care providers. Section 5 is the Child Care Regulation Modernization Project that was in House File 1036. And Section 6 is the Family Child Care Regulation Modernization Project that was in House File 2003. Both of these projects direct DHS to contract with an organization to develop proposals related to child care center licensing and family child care licensing. And the bill appropriates money from the general fund for each of these proposals. Section 7 directs DHS to develop a proposal for a one-stop regional assistance network to assist individuals with matters related to starting or sustaining a licensed family child care program. And this proposal was in House File 2003. Section 8 directs DHS to develop recommended but not required orientation training for family child care license applicants. And this is a modified version of a proposal that was included in House File 2003. Section 9 establishes a Family Child Care Training Advisory Committee to advise DHS on training requirements for family child care providers. And this proposal was in House File 2003, and the bill appropriates money from the general fund for this proposal. So Article 3 includes a number of sort of miscellaneous health and human services policies. And I'm now on page 23, line 26 of the DE1. Section 1 establishes in statute the Retain Grant Program, and this program provides competitive grants to child care professionals to incentivize them to remain in the workforce. This proposal was in House File 260 with an appropriation from the general fund, and funding this program is also a recommendation from the Family Child Care Task Force. I'll note for members that this bill does not appropriate or allocate money to this program. Sections 2 and 3 make changes to the Teach Grant Program, which is a program that provides scholarship and education incentives to individuals in the early care and education workforce. This proposal was also in House File 260, and it was also a recommendation from the Family Child Care Task Force. This bill does appropriate money to the TEACH grants from the general fund. Section 4 is a proposal that allows an entity administering a child saving program to access certain types of birth records, and this proposal was in House File 1942. Section 5 is a proposal that the committee heard in House File 910. This proposal directs DHS to report on foster children's participation in early care and education programs, and the bill appropriates money from the general fund for this proposal. Section 6 establishes a competitive grant program to expand access to childcare for children with disabilities. This language is modified from House File 668, and the bill allocates federal money for these grants. Section 7 is a new proposal that directs DHS to establish a grant program to test strategies for sharing services among family childcare providers. And this proposal relates to a recommendation from the Family Childcare Task Force, and the bill allocates federal money for this grant program. Section 8 is a technical instruction to the reviser related to the TEACH program. Article 4, I'm now on page 31 of the DE1. The first three articles I just went through all had proposals that were largely related to health and human services policy areas, and the proposals in this article are largely under the jurisdiction of the Department of Education. One just technical note as I go through this, Chair Pinto mentioned the A3 amendment, and the A3 does delete two sections from this article, which I'll mention as I go through. So Section 1 designates 10.72% of the total state appropriation to Head Start for federally designated tribal Head Start programs. This proposal was in House File 2230. Section 2 provides that schools must employ a licensed teacher to provide instruction in school-based early education programs, such as voluntary pre-kindergarten. And this proposal was in House File 711. Section 3 is a section, it was related to the school breakfast program, and this would be deleted by the A3 amendment. This proposal is being carried and paid for in the K-12 omnibus. Section 4 allows ALO parents to participate in early childhood family education or ECFE programs, and this proposal was in House File 2230. Section 5 requires an evaluation of Parent Aware, the state's quality rating and improvement system. This proposal was in House File 1876, the bill allocates federal money for this evaluation. Section 6, 7, and 8 all relate to the voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus programs. So I'm just going to remind members here that the committee heard House File 871 last month, and that bill retained the 4,000 school readiness plus seats that are set to expire at the end of this fiscal year. The committee also heard an amendment to House File 871 that would merge the voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus programs so that there would be one voluntary pre-kindergarten program with 7,160 seats. So that would be the 3,160 seats that are permanent and the 4,000 seats that are set to expire at the end of this year. The proposal in House File 871, retaining the seats, is being carried in the K-12 omnibus bill. So what's in these sections 6, 7, and 8, is the proposal to merge the voluntary pre-kindergarten and readiness plus programs into one voluntary pre-kindergarten program.
Ms. Mock, I want to pause you just for a second, just to clarify something. For those of us following along on the summary that you put together, and a reminder to members of the public that summary is available on our website. I think it's styled 2230 DE1 Pinto AM. That summary reflects the A3 amendment as well. Is that correct?
It does, yes.
Okay. And good. And so the reason that I'm pointing that out, if other folks are confused, Ms. Mock is occasionally pointing to section numbers that fit the bill, the DE1, but don't necessarily match the bill summary. And the reason is because the bill summary takes into account that A3 amendment. So just if you're a little bit confused about the numbers of sections, that will help clarify that. Just want to make sure that's clear for folks. So please continue, Ms. Mock.
Thank you. I apologize for that. Thanks for the clarification. So section 9, so now we're on page 41, line 22 of the DE1. This is a proposal to mandate the kindergarten readiness assessment for all incoming kindergartners. Under current law, it's optional for schools to assess the incoming kindergartners. This proposal was in House File 1568, and the bill appropriates money from the general fund for this proposal. Section 10 is a proposal that changes age eligibility for early learning scholarships to children who are under the age of 5 under September 1 of the current school year. So under current law, children ages 3 to 5 are eligible for the scholarships, with some younger kids eligible if they meet certain criteria. This would change it so that all children under the age of 5 are eligible for scholarships. And this proposal is a modified version of the A1 amendment to House File 1293. Section 11 also affects the Early Learning Scholarship Program. So paragraph A is a new proposal that changes how the Department of Education must prioritize applications for early learning scholarships. Under this proposal, the first priority group is children in high-risk groups, including children who have a teen parent, children who are homeless, and children who are in foster care or otherwise in need of protection or services. The second priority group is children who are from birth through age 2, and the third priority group is children who are 3 or 4 years of age. Paragraph C lifts the cap on the amount of funding that MDE can designate to Pathway 2 scholarships. This proposal was in House File 2203. And paragraph D decreases the amount of time a scholarship recipient has to enroll in a program before the scholarship cancels from 10 months to 3 months. This proposal was in House File 2230. I'll also note that the bill does appropriate money over the base from the general fund for the early learning scholarships. Section 12 prohibits a child in a publicly funded preschool or kindergarten program to use a screen such as a tablet or a smartphone without engagement from a teacher or other students. The limits are not applied to children who have individualized family service plans or individualized education programs. This is a modified version of House File 570. Section 13 is another section that will be deleted by the A3 amendment relating to English language learners. And this proposal and its costs are being carried in the K-12 omnibus. And this is, of course, going to further screw up the numbering for the summary if you're following that. Sections 14 and 15 have technical changes related to the merger of the voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus programs that I discussed earlier. Section 16 provides that the goal of the state is for all families to have access to affordable, high quality early care and education programs. And section 17 establishes the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force to develop strategies to school. These proposals were in House File 1278, and the bill appropriates money from the general fund for the task force. Section 18 is a new proposal that directs the Children's Cabinet to develop recommendations on 1, the governance of early care development and learning programs, and 2, how such programs could be consolidated into an existing state agency or a new department. And the bill appropriates money from the general fund for this proposal. Section 19 is also a new proposal, and this one directs the Children's Cabinet to evaluate how federal money received under 3 federal coronavirus relief laws is used to address the state's needs in the area of early care and education. And the bill allocates federal money for this proposal. And then section 20 is a repealer related to the VPK and voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus merger. So going on to article 5, I'm on page 55, line 15. This article includes appropriations from the general fund to MMB and then also to the Department of Education. And I'm just gonna, rather than go through the entire article, I'm just gonna highlight a few of the appropriations in this article that I haven't already mentioned. So subdivision 7 on page 57, line 3, provides an appropriation over the base for the Parent-Child Plus program, which is a literacy and school readiness home visiting program. And this proposal was in House File 617. Subdivision 13 appropriates money over the base for the Reach Out and Read Minnesota program. This proposal is a modified version of what was in House File 1384. And subdivision 14 appropriates money for grants to the 11 tribal nations located in Minnesota to provide programming and services to children and families. This proposal was in House File 2230. Moving on to Article 6, this includes appropriations and allocations for health and human services proposals. The appropriations are in Section 2, which begins on page 60, line 7. I've mentioned most of these appropriations, but I'll just point out one that I have not mentioned, and that is the appropriation to DHS for a grant to the Minnesota Child Care Provider Information Network for establishing a peer mentoring program for licensed family child care providers. And this appropriation is on page 61, line 5, and the committee heard this proposal in House File 1652. This article also includes language that directs DHS to allocate federal money that the state will receive pursuant to the American Rescue Plan for specified activities. These allocations are in sections 3 and 4, starting on page 62, line 13. I've mentioned most of these, so I'll just briefly go through them. Section 3 allocates $212.4 million that the state is expected to receive. $1.65 million is for the parent aware evaluation, and the remaining amount is for reprioritizing the basic sliding fee waiting list, increasing child care assistant rates for the legal non-licensed family child care providers, and then increasing the child care assistant rates to the 50th percentile of the most recent survey. Section 4, which begins on page 63, allocates an additional $325 million that will be received from the American Rescue Plan. With $1.5 million for the Children's Cabinet to conduct an evaluation of the use of the federal money, $500,000 for grants to community-based organizations working with family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. $100,000 for the Shared Services Grant Program for family child care providers. $500,000 for the grants to expand access to child care for children with disabilities. $5 million for child care facility grants. And then all of the remaining amount, minus $5 million for monthly grants to providers of early care and education, with providers directed to pay 75% of such grants to employees providing the early care and education. And if my math is correct, that'll be about $312.4 million that's allocated for these grants, with the remaining $5 million for administration of these grants. Finally, the last section of this article and the DE1 is language providing that if any of the expenditures under this bill are eligible for federal money received by the state under the American Rescue Plan, then the expenditure is paid for with the federal money and the corresponding general fund amounts canceled. And that is the DE1.
Mark, thank you. I think that you generally addressed the A3. I don't know if there's anything more that you want to say about that or that is needed to be said about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think the substantive pieces of the A3 were the two deleted sections that I mentioned.
Okay, thank you. And members, we're going to be hearing from fiscal staff and then, of course, coming for broader questions. If there are particular clarification questions anybody has right now, please, Ms. Mock, you can certainly ask, but then we will also, of course, have a chance to ask questions at the end. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right at the end of that of the presentation, and thank you for that, by the way, on line 63.20, $5 million for administering the monthly grants under Clause 7, is that an accurate number? Could you explain that a little bit more, please? It seems kind of high to me. That's why I'm asking.
I think your question, Representative Juergens, so the question from Ms. Mock is that accurate in terms of the content of the bill? And I believe that the answer is yes, but we'll have Ms. Mock answer that. And then Ms. Mock?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Juergens, yes, that's correct. It is $5 million for administering the grants.
And then as to the substance, Representative Juergens, I'll just note, we're kind of moving as we go that my thinking on that number, we can talk more about this in the next couple of days, but it is a more than $300 million program lasting for 2 years. And so, often if you kind of figure the percentage that in terms of making sure a program like that works well, et cetera, there can be a cost to that. I see Mr. Berg has unmuted and he may have a thought to share about kind of that estimate in terms of that amount of money. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, it was right along the lines with what you were saying. If you work this out, that is 1.6% of the cost of the grants being administered for administration, which is actually quite a low administrative cost in state government.
Representative Juergens, we're as with many of these things, we're kind of having to go as we go along, and so we don't have a fiscal note at this point because the stabilization funds have just become aware of them, right? We just had the presentation last week, so we're kind of had to put a number in. But anyway, Representative Juergens, we'll get back to you.
No, and I guess when you put it in perspective of 1.6%, it makes sense. It stuck out because of the large size, the size of the number. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. And I would say, and that's the kind of question that I think we'll be especially thinking about in the next couple of days. Good to get into it a bit now. And then also a lot of what we're trying to do right at the moment is just to make sure members are at least aware of what the content of the bill is and we can go from there. So, yeah, thanks for the question. Just before we turn or as we turn to the fiscal staff to walk through the numbers, Ms. Adrian's first, we're going to have you up in just a second. Ms. Mock, I'm actually going to ask you a question that I'd like you to think about while a fiscal staff is presenting, which is that I had been thinking that we would adopt all the amendments on Thursday, including the A3. But it does occur to me that since the A3 deletes a couple of sections and your bill summary reflects the A3, I kind of wonder if we should perhaps adopt the A3 today. That would then require you to produce, I think, DE1 as amended draft or something so that we can then be able to do amendments on Thursday to that amended DE1. So I'm kind of going back and forth on that and really want to defer to you. You could either answer right now if you want to think about it while we have fiscal staff present. You could then let me know your answer. But I'm kind of wondering if just to avoid confusion, it'd be good to have a version of the DE on Thursday that amendments can be drafted directly to that reflects the summary. Ms. Mock, looks like you do have a thought on that.
Well, my thought is that I would like a minute to think about it and I'll get back to you.
I was thinking that might be the case. So yeah, please. And I suspect there'll be some questions on the numbers, so you'll probably have a little bit of time to think. So I think we've got Ms. Adrians up first, and I'm so grateful to her for her just incredible work for us and also Chair Dabney's committee. And so Ms. Adrians, if you can walk us through, I believe, the spreadsheet that will be both in front of us and then also members of the public you'll find on the committee website. If you can start walking us through that, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And our intrepid committee administrator has put it up on the screen, so this will make it even easier. So my name is Emily Adrians, and I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee. And what I'd like to do is I will let Mr. Berg cover the human services portion. So Mr. Krennic, if you wouldn't mind scrolling down towards the education related items. Perfect, thank you so much. And so just to orient all of the members to the spreadsheet and what we're looking at, what we have done is given everybody the base funding for the programs that are under the jurisdiction of the committee. So when it says February forecast base, as it does on line 48, what this means is this is all of the funding that was sort of planned already for these programs. And you can see we start with fiscal years 2020 and 2021, but the bienniums that we're mostly focusing on are the upcoming fiscal years of 22 and 23, and then what we refer to as the tails for fiscal years 24 and 25. You can see all of those columns there. And then the items that I will focus on are the change items. So this is the additional funding that the bill is proposing to add to the base funding. So the change item lines start on line 65 where it says change items. And so just below that, line 66, this is funding that would be distributed to Minnesota Management and Budget and for the Early Childhood Governance Report. And the reason that it is going to that agency is they act as the fiscal host for the Children's Cabinet. So it's a prudent way to distribute that money. And the amount for that program is $250,000 in fiscal year 22 only. That's a one-time appropriation. On the next line, this is the increase in scholarships that Ms. Mock referred to. The proposed amount for this is an additional $18.2 million in fiscal years 22 and 23 each. And then in the tails, it would increase a bit to just under $19.3 million. On line 68, this is another funding program for the Children's Cabinet to administer. This is the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force. And the amount is $500,000 in fiscal year 22 only. This is another one-time appropriation. On line 69, this is an increase for the Kindergarten Readiness Assessment Program. So an additional $1.5 million in the first 2 years for the agency to run this program, and then in the tails, about $1.2 million each year. On line 70, this is the increased funding for the Parent-Child Plus program. It's $600,000 additionally each year. On line 71, this is the funding for Reach Out and Read Minnesota. The amount is $150,000 each year. These are ongoing amounts. And then on line 72, this was one of the governor's recommendations, the tribal early learning package. And this, I believe Ms. Mack referenced this, the money will be available to the 11 tribal nations in the state to try to reduce education learning gaps. And the amount is $3.3 million each year. And before I have Mr. Berg take over, I'll just let you know, so below those lines, so on line 76, you can see this is the total of the base amounts. So the committee, the jurisdiction that the committee has, and the total for the first biennium is just under $666 million. And then the new funding is right on the line right below that for both human services and education change items. And you can see that's $50 million in fiscal years 22 and 23. Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. We'll see if there are any clarifying questions for you right now. I suspect not, that folks are still just taking this in, and a reminder that we'll certainly have questions at the end as well, members. So why don't we turn then to Mr. Berg, who deserves a particular shout out for his just incredibly hard work the last week and a half. He's supporting multiple other HHS committees, and I'm just so grateful. So Mr. Berg, if you can please walk us through the HHS portion of this tracking sheet.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I see Ms. Cirkvanek's gone to the top of the page. And again, just to reiterate what Ms. Adrian said on the orientation of it is the same for the unshaded items at the top, which are the human services items. The middle columns are the 22-23 biennium, and the far right-hand columns are the tails. And like the education one, the first three lines 14 through 16, show the base for the three programs that are under the jurisdiction of this committee, MFIP Child Care, Basic Sliding Fee Child Care, and the Child Care Development Grants line, which together are just about $325 million in the base in 22-23, and just under $406 million in the tails. And then beginning on line 19 are the changes to those bases for the human services related programs. Line 19 is a governor's recommendation to limit the ability to have retroactive payments in the CCAP programs, which saves $1.3 million in 22-23 and $1.3 million in 23-24-25. Line 20 is the implementation cost, the administration systems cost of the governor's recommendation that CCAP rates go to the 30th percentile of the most recent survey. That members will remember, and we'll come to it momentarily, is paid for. The rates are paid for with federal money, but there is a small $12,000 biennium cost to change the IT systems to accommodate the new rates, and that cannot be paid out of federal CCDBG money, so it's paid for out of the general fund, and that is in a budget activity that is actually not in this committee's jurisdiction. It is in Representative Schultz's committee, but the cost of the change in systems is being carried here. On line 21, we have the first of the committee change items that Ms. Mock mentioned, House File 1036, the Child Care Center Regulation Modernization Bill, which costs $1.318 million in 22-23 and $741,000 in the tails. Line 22 is House File 245, the Family Child Care Center Regulation Modernization item. And I'll just note here, there were two bills that did many of the same things here. The House File 245, which was fiscal noted, did just the Child Care Center Regulation Modernization part. House File 2003 that Ms. Mock referred to on a number of occasions did all of that plus some additional things. What is here is the cost out of the 245 fiscal note for all of the Child Care Center Regulation Modernization costs, plus you'll note the asterisk that is on line 30. It includes the Family Child Care Training Advisory Committee line from the 2003 fiscal note. Now, there were several other sections in the language from the 2003 bill that did not show costs in the fiscal note. This is all of the family child care costs plus that one line on the Family Child Care Training Academy. And together, those are $1.12 million in 22-23 and $658,000 in the tails. Line 260 is the TEACH grants, which is $500,000 per year, $1 million in 22-23 and $1 million in the tails. Line 24 is House File 61, the bill to create an ombudsman for child care providers. The cost of the ombudsman is $246,000 in the first biennium and $252,000 in the tails. This is another one that actually the costs are in the central office at DHS. We're carrying those costs in this bill, even though the base for that program is in another committee. Line 25 is House File 910, which is the report on participation in early childhood programs in foster care, which is $50,000 for that report. House File 1652 on line 26 is the family child care peer mentoring bill that had $50,000 in appropriations in 22-23 and nothing in the tails. And then on line 27 is in human services, things that are in the central office at Department of Human Services frequently carry federal financial participation, that is for eligible expenditures on administrative costs and systems costs, the federal government reimburses us for a portion of the cost. You'll see that House File 61, House File 245, and House File 1036 all have federal financial participation. In human services, that is counted as an offset. You see the number of the negative 858,000 in 22-23 and negative 522,000 in the tails. That is accounted for separately in human services and is here. So you get to line 28 is the net expenditure of these changes, which is 1.67 million in 22-23 and 885,000 in 24-25. That's the general fund costs, and I'll move on. Just the green shaded items, or if you printed it out, just shaded items. On line 32 is the governor's recommendation to go to the 30th percentile of the most recent survey in child care maximum rates. And that has specific numbers in each year. That is represents federal CCDBG money that the state already had in hand or knows that we will have in hand from the CCDBG block grant prior to the passage of the American Rescue Plan. So we know the specifics of the allocations there. If you go down to lines 34 through 37, this represents the federal funding that Ms. Mock mentioned that is in the DE amendment in Article 6, Section 3. It allocates the $212 million in new CCDBG money that's part of the American Rescue Plan. And of that, at some point I've talked to the chair, some of these items, there aren't numbers here. There are a few of them we do know numbers, and Ms. Mock mentioned, I think, a number of those. In this first grouping, the parent aware evaluation, the bill specifies that $1.65 million will be for the parent aware evaluation. And the balance of the 212, which is $210,350,000, is for the other two items of taking the CCAP maximum rates from the governor's 30th percentile recommendation to the 50th percentile. And it also includes the cost of reprioritizing basic sliding fee wait list. Those two items have an interaction between them, and we're waiting for more specific guidance from the department on how these funds would be allocated across different years for those items, but that's where the 212 goes. And if you go to the last shaded section beginning on line 39, this is the funding that Ms. Mock mentioned in Article 6, Section 4 of the DE amendment, which is the $325 million from the Federal Child Care Stabilization Fund, which is part of the American Rescue Plan. And of that, I'll come back to the top item on line 40 of the monthly grants to providers and grant administration. Line 41, the evaluation of use of federal funds, the bill specifies $1.5 million. Line 42, the family, friend, and neighbor caregiver grants, the bill specifies $500,000. Line 43, the family child care shared services pilot is $100,000 in the bill. Line 44, the grants for child care for children with disabilities is $500,000. Line 45, the Child Care Improvement Grants Program has $5 million in it in the bill, and that leaves, when you deduct those from the $325 million, you have $317.4 million left for the monthly grants to providers and grant administration. And as we noted before, the grant administration is $5 million. So that leaves a total of $312.4 million for monthly grants to providers out of the Child Care Stabilization Fund. And I just one other note I would make, Mr. Chair, this committee has the basic sliding fee child care program and the MFIP child care program. And the change items I mentioned are the ones that pertain to this committee. There are two other change items in the governor's budget which affect those budget items and which are being carried in one of them in Representative Liebling's committee, the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, which is the general fraud prevention and program integrity piece that the governor recommended, which projects small savings to the MFIP and basic sliding fee child care programs. And then there is a program in Representative Schultz's committee, the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee, that the governor recommended that is a, it promotes uniformity across economic support programs, including the MFIP child care program, and has an expenditure in that program. The costs of those items, those governor recommendations, are being carried in the other two committees because they're parts of governor's recommendations that are, they're in, it's a broad recommendation across multiple budget activities, and those items are kind of integral to it and couldn't be kind of taken out and put over here. So there are two items that affect these programs that are in a different in different committees.
Thank you, Mr. Berg, for the walkthrough and for, again, for all of your work. As long as you mentioned the Health Committee, I just want to note the home visiting programs, for which we act as a policy committee, but that budget item is in the Health Committee as well. And so just to sort of highlight for members that I know that there are, I believe, some decisions being made in the Health Committee relating to that. But once we passed some proposals on to the Health Committee, they then have that. But that's an area certainly we care a lot about as a committee. Let me think. So I've had some exchanges. First of all, I had some exchanges with Ms. Mock, and I believe that the plan, and I'll confirm this with her, is to not adopt the A3. She's going to adjust the bill summary for the DE1 so the sections all line up. And then amendments that we hear on Thursday will be to the DE1. I would expect the first amendment that we will take up on Thursday will be the A3. But Ms. Mock, is that your preference for how we handle things?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yep. And so members of the public, then the DE1 will be sort of our base, and amendments that we hear on Thursday will be to that to that language, including the A3, as was mentioned. And so we'll have a bill summary that then reflects that for Thursday. That completes our walkthrough. Let me think. I think we've got what we need for that. I want to see if members have questions at all for any of our incredible staff members about what's in the bill. There's a lot there, a lot to think about and consider over the next day or two. Just as you're considering, I'll note that we have our usual amendment deadline tomorrow afternoon. We will hear from members of the public. I want to encourage members of the public who have thoughts on the bill to sign up to testify. You'll want to contact Ms. Cirkvenek, and the information is all on our committee website if you wish to share comments or thoughts tomorrow morning with us for consideration as we then make our final decisions on the bill on Thursday. You can all probably tell that I'm stalling for time a little bit to see if anybody has anything that they want to ask about or talk about. I will note again that the federal funding especially, but also the state funding that we received the target for, does give us a real opportunity to make great strides this session. We know that even if this becomes law, there's still a significant gap that will be in place for the lowest income kids. I'll note that there is, of course, more federal funding. There's $2.6 billion in and funding that can be used in a wide variety of ways. And so I know that we're looking at a lot of different ways to come at this, but I feel like this proposal gets us a very strong way, very strong step along the way. So okay, looking to see if any final questions or comments from anybody. I am not seeing anything. And so I want to encourage members, and again, members of the public, especially as you scour the bill, please be in touch with things that you notice. I expect there'll be a second author's amendment besides the A3 on Thursday, as I notice things with Ms. Mock and others. And then certainly we'll look forward to hearing members' proposals as well. So, okay, well, not seeing anything. So with that, let's all keep in touch. We'll look forward to convening again tomorrow morning at 8:30 to hear public testimony on the bill and 8:30 on Thursday to hear amendments. And with that, this meeting of the committee is adjourned. Thanks so much and have a great day, everybody.